Hi, and welcome to the July 3rd Thursday call. I'm Deborah Houston, and for those of you who don't know me, who might be listening into this recording, I am an executive coach who works with senior-level international business people, whether they're employed by a corporation or have their own company. I work as a thinking partner, basically, and often help them understand what's unique about them and how to leverage that uniqueness in the work that they do. And I love this topic, so I've decided to talk about what is uniqueness in business and how does that translate into being your unassailable competitive advantage. To me, that term uniqueness helps to articulate that which defines us differently from others around us. And there's some traditional, if you will, ways of defining uniqueness. That might be things like being entrepreneurial, or entrepreneurial, being innovative in organizations. Nowadays, we talk a lot about thought leadership, and something I talk about on other calls around being pioneering versus being a builder. Those are some of the ways that people stand out, that defines people as unique. And they have a particular goal or idea that they can envision and the wherewithal to make it happen. And these are the Steve Jobs and the Bill Gateses and the entrepreneurs, the big names of the business world. But I think that there are some other types of uniqueness that I work with my clients that expand this idea even further. And some of them are the fact that for many of my clients, their style of leadership is different to the styles around them, and yet they are no less leaders for that. In other words, they may not be the kind of step out in front, take charge leaders that a lot of people equate with leadership. We're going to go in this direction. We're going to make this happen. I want you to get on board behind me. And yet some of the other places from which people might lead include leading from the side. In other words, I'm going to partner with you and help you achieve what you're trying to achieve. And, oh, look over there. And, oh, gee, what about this? And or there's leading from behind, where you encourage people to step forward. You might even encourage them to think of it as their own idea, even if it perhaps may have come from you as the leader. There's a wonderful book called The Tao of Leadership, and he talks about this sort of almost servant leadership. There's a book by Henry and Karen Kimsey House talking about five different types of leadership. I think they talk about leadership from within as well, and also leadership from around, from everything around you. That might look different than traditional leadership. And people who embody this kind of leadership, who do it automatically without even thinking about it, might feel different from other people in the organization. They might stand out. They might even find it a bit uncomfortable because they're aware that they do things differently than other people around them. And yet my assertion is that that's actually your strength. Some other types of uniqueness that are less obvious, although I would say they are no less powerful, in fact, perhaps even more powerful, are things like if you're someone who has engaged with or been impacted by addiction, whether it's your own or somebody else's, you have learned some things about human nature, about human interactions, about how people engage with each other successfully and unsuccessfully, about what it takes to communicate through difficult situations, about how to navigate issues around control and authority that many people haven't considered, aren't aware of, don't think about. So I see that as a form of uniqueness and a strength. I see things like an awareness of or being motivated by spirituality, a spiritual approach to the way you do your work. Bring a different element into the work you do. It has a place in terms of how one does their work and how motivated, how passionate, how much of a calling even that work is. I have also done some talks around things like giftedness and high sensitivity. For those who haven't listened to the talk and you might want to go to my website, there's a recording and some other materials there around this topic, but basically, research has shown that about 20% of the population is highly sensitive. which means that physiologically, these people are just wired differently. They take in a lot more information. They process that information, that data, if you will, differently than other people around them. And they put together ideas, concepts, ways of looking at the world differently than other people. They notice subtleties that other people don't notice. They make fabulous advisors. But the thing is, if they are not aware of their high sensitivity and if they don't know how to manage it, they can get overwhelmed very easily because they take in so much more than most people do and very often aren't aware of it, that when they have taken in all that information, they start to flood. And if you are flooding, you become paralyzed because there's all this stuff happening and you're overwhelmed. You can't deal with that much happening all at once. And so for a highly sensitive person, it's important to understand that about yourself so that you can take the time that you need in whatever way you need to do it, whether it's walking out of the room or simply turning your attention to your breath quietly for a minute or two, mentally distancing yourself from the situation, so that you can let that flooding recede and continue to act on the information that you're receiving without having a negative impact on people around you. Now, the problem is most people don't understand what high sensitivity is, that it even exists, and how to work with it. And so if they see someone in their environment who's flooded, who's overwhelmed, who's overreacting, they're likely to see that person as a problem rather than realizing that actually there's a gift here that can be channeled to the benefit of everyone around them. And the gifts, by the way, are legion. There's much more information about this on Dr. Elaine Aaron's website, but I will just say that many prominent people, their high sensitivity is part of their gift and part of what allows them to do what they do. Last one I'll mention is giftedness. This comes from a book by a woman named Mary Elaine Jacobson, and she talks about work that Howard Gardner did at Harvard University. And they identified through extensive research over many years that there are at least 8 different types of giftedness, probably more. They just didn't have time to do enough research to document additional types. But essentially, if you think about the school system that most of us, certainly in the United States, the kind of schooling that we get tends to emphasize math and language skills and perhaps science. If you have a gift that's so powerful in you that it simply needs to be expressed, it simply will not be denied, and yet you're trying to fit yourself into a traditional school system or a traditional corporate role or a traditional job, you're going to be working against yourself. You're going to find yourself being frustrated, exhausted, feeling depleted, getting burned out. And sometimes it's because there's something that needs to be expressed in you. And if you have some of these other kinds of gifts that are not as widely recognized, unless you understand them, accept them, and know how to manifest them and capitalize on them, you could very well find yourself feeling frustrated and like you're up against something that you just don't understand. So I'm going to stop there. Those are some of the types of uniqueness that I've seen and that I have worked with people around. I'm curious what you've seen and what your experience is. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
One of the things that's striking me is a matter of degree, which Howard Gardner made an issue of, that iterative creativity and so forth versus transformational, that some people are so far out on the spectrum that it's hard for them to relate and feel, especially in the sensitivity areas and so forth. Mm-hmm. So I think that many of the people who struggle with this don't know where to go to either be able to identify what it is that makes them different and make them not feel like they fit or not wanting to or being able to fit the traditional modes.
Well, exactly, and that's why I'm talking about this and trying to make it available to other people, because there are resources out there. I've mentioned a couple of books and things that people have written about some of these kinds of things. There are people like you and I who work as coaches and consultants with people who have this kind of experience. For me, one of the most important things is helping people to understand these things about themselves, name them, and normalize them so that they understand they're not alone. They're not the only people who feel this way. Even things like autism or Asperger's or ADHD, many of these things we're now coming to understand actually carry along with them great intelligence, great capability, great capacity. It's just that we haven't always known how to work with them or how to understand them. As we communicate more with each other and understand more about how to draw out the benefit from these different ways of being unique, other people are coming forward. And to me, another very important piece of this, besides communicating it, naming it, and normalizing it, is finding like-minded people so that you don't feel like you're the only one, whether they're like-minded people within your organization or, if that's not possible, like-minded people outside of your organization or your environment who you can go to talk about what the experience is, to talk about how to navigate some of the challenges that come along with this, to talk about how to articulate to people around you that don't understand what it is that you see, what it is that you experience, how it is that you can contribute so that they can hear you. Because for a lot of people, once they believe it in themselves, then that confidence gets transmitted to other people around them. And they're able to help other people around them see the value that they bring, see this, what I call, unassailable competitive advantage that they bring. But it's something that they have to understand about themselves first. And part of the way we do that is by talking with like-minded people, by getting some support, by finding validation, so that we understand ourselves well enough so that we can start to help people who don't understand us understand the gifts that we can bring to them and the contributions that we can make.
I think that often people try so hard to fit in when they don't, and therefore they feel insecure and they try to hide their differences so that they're not held against them. And then everybody misses the opportunity of what they can bring.
Yes, and that's such a waste of human talent, human ability, human capability. I was listening to an audio that Carl Rogers did. I think you know Carl Rogers was a pioneer and a huge voice in the therapeutic world. And he had a video of 8 people in a group, and they were simply speaking with each other over a period of maybe 5 days to a week, and they made this video of highlights of this conversation. And I was struck by how radical it was for them to simply have a conversation about emotions, about concerns, about feeling alienated, about not knowing how to talk to each other. At that time, that was a radical act. I mean, at that time, therapy was a big deal. I know when I was growing up, even in the 70s, the idea of a therapist was a big deal for my family.
Came with very negative labels.
Extremely negative labels. And yet all it is at its heart is a conversation between two people trying to work out what's not working and how to make it work better. That's really all therapy is. That's really all a 12-step group is. That's really all a coaching or a consulting conversation is. It's people working together to try to find an answer, trying to find a solution. And the more we do it, the better we get at it.
Super points.
So we're getting close to the end. Is there anything else you'd like to ask?
I've been sitting here nodding and shaking my head and making some notes. I would love to have you distill down once again the steps that I think you embedded about, regardless of what people's uniqueness is, the ways that they can go about normalizing them, allowing them to access and share and incorporate their uniqueness into their environment, be it social or family or workplace.
The first thing I would say would be to do some research. If something that you can come up with as a word that at least comes close to encapsulating what you're experiencing, read whatever resources come up online. And if they don't come up, then reach out to people like helping professionals, whether they're therapists or coaches or consultants or whatever. If you're at a large corporation, maybe your EAP group or perhaps human resources. But people who specialize in working with people may be more aware of some of the different kinds of uniquenesses that we know more about nowadays. So do some research. Get some normalization around it for yourself. find other like-minded people. Take the risk, if worst comes to worst, of putting it out there to people around you. You know, I think I'm experiencing this. I'm not quite sure how to think of it. Do you know anyone that knows anything about this kind of thing? Like-minded people who you can talk with about your questions, your experience, so that you can normalize it. Because once you start that conversation, the more you talk about it, the more you explore it, the more you look at how your day-to-day life is impacted by these things you're experiencing, the more comfortable and confident you're going to be in talking about it with other people around you. So that when you get to the point where you feel ready, you can go back to your family, who may be some of the toughest people, just because they're the closest to you and they care about you and they want the best for you and they want you to be like them because they think that's going to make you happy, not realizing that what's going to make you happy may well be very different than what's going to make them happy, and that that's just okay. And or bringing it back into your workplace or into your corporate environment, into conversations with colleagues. Anything else before we wrap up?
I've got so much to absorb from here. It's really exciting. Thank you, Deborah.
I'm so pleased. You're very welcome.